You're listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. I'm Matt Dellinger. With me are Daryl Hunt and Mark Ravel. Daryl was 19 when he was convicted, twice, of the rape and murder of a young newspaper reporter in North Carolina in 1984. Mr. Hunt maintained his innocence, and in 1994, DNA tests proved that neither Hunt nor another suspect, Sammy Mitchell, was involved in the rape. It nevertheless took 10 more years of legal appeals to exonerate him. Mark Ravel had been practicing law for just 4 years when he was court-appointed to assist a senior partner in his law firm in representing Daryl Hunt. He would continue to represent Mr. Hunt for the next 20 years through trials, hearings, investigations, appeals, and finally, clemency and pardon proceedings. The story of the case is told in the HBO documentary, The Trials of Daryl Hunt. Welcome, gentlemen. Both good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Daryl, what happened? Why were you charged with this crime?
Oh, I've been trying to figure that out for a while, but in 84, when the 911 call was made, the person who made the call said his name was Sammy Mitchell. Sammy Mitchell was a friend of mine, so when they came to talk to Sammy Mitchell, to verify that he didn't make the phone call, I had to give him my name. And from that point, I became involved. The prosecutor did not like Sammy Mitchell. His first case, Don Tisdale's first case that he ever lost, was against a case against Sammy Mitchell. So he wanted me to say that Sammy Mitchell committed the crime because he wanted him so bad. So when I wouldn't lie on Sammy Mitchell, they said they'd charge me.
And so how did he go about asking for that testimony? Did he literally ask for it?
Yeah. He said that just say that Sammy Mitchell did it and you can walk and get the $10,000 reward money.
But you were convicted. And what was your sentence?
I was given a life sentence.
Mark, you represented him for 2 decades. Did you ever doubt his innocence?
No. When I was first appointed, as with any case, you have a natural assumption that perhaps a person had some involvement, so that was natural to think the police must have some reason to charge Daryl, some evidence. But after I talked to Daryl the first time, it was clear that he was innocent, not only by his demeanor, but by everything that he was able to tell me, from where he was to all of the testing that he was willing to do to prove his innocence. He was willing to do anything to prove his innocence, whether it was blood testing, polygraph, or DNA evidence, which wasn't even possible in 1984.
And what ultimately went wrong? Why was he convicted anyway?
There's a number of reasons why. I think the main reason is racism. You have a white female editor of the local newspaper who was raped and stabbed 16 times, and that is basically a few years earlier, that literally would have been a lynching not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what followed thereafter was basically a legitimized form of lynching where the state sought the death penalty against Daryl. In fact, in one document that we got several years later, we know that 3 months before the trial, the district attorney wrote to the police chief and said, contrary to what has been stated publicly, we do not have a solid prosecution of any kind. That's the district attorney saying this to the chief of police before the trial. 3 months later, that same district attorney was picking a jury and asking for the death penalty for Daryl Hunt, having written that letter. He systematically excluded blacks from the jury and systematically put up fabricated evidence to try to, well, to convict Daryl and to try to give him the death penalty.
And the shocking fact about, the most shocking fact about this, there's many shocking facts, but is that even after DNA tests proved that you were not involved, it still took 10 years to get you out of prison. Why did it take so long?
The courts just didn't want to accept that they made a mistake. They wanted to uphold the conviction at any cost.
So did you have to basically go through heroic measures? What were the steps to get him to go from the DNA test to exoneration?
Well, to back up a second,
yeah.
Why did we lose Daryl's case even in spite of the DNA evidence? Well, this was after a second trial, And there's a predisposition by the courts that if somebody's had two trials, then that's enough fairness, regardless of the injustices of the two trials, regardless of the lies that were told, regardless of the thousands of pages of discovery that were not turned over. So there was a bias against granting a new trial, no matter what the case. Secondly, I don't think we can ignore the fact of racism in the case. And, you know, from the very beginning, white woman, black man, rape, that there's issues of racism. Cross-racial identification, Klansmen as a main witness, intimidation of black witnesses. Black witnesses were threatened with being prosecuted, whereas white witnesses were rewarded. And so the theory, the state, the courts, concocted a theory that even though the DNA showed that it wasn't Daryl's semen in the victim, that possibly he was in the area, possibly he was a lookout, maybe he helped. And all of the court's theories flew in the face of the actual arguments made by the prosecutors, which were that this man right here was the rapist and the killer. The DNA contradicted that, yet they concocted theories just to preserve a conviction. And I think largely it has to do with racism.
They were going for reasonable suspicion instead of reasonable doubt, sounds like. What area of North Carolina is this, and what town was it in? And was it particularly racially divided? Or?
Yeah, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The city was racially divided. And I guess you can kind of get that from the name itself, Winston and Salem.
There you have it.
Yeah.
And what was it like living there even before all of this? Was it difficult?
I didn't experience any racism. I wasn't even thinking about that at 19. I was just being a 19-year-old.
Right.
That wasn't my focus. It really hit me when I was charged and all the things that were said and done throughout. So.
What were those were the first 10 years different from the second 10 years for you? I mean, knowing that you'd been proven innocent, I mean, was it about a different feeling to it?
Well, the first 10 years were basically I was trying to stay alive.
Yeah.
There was a lot of threats and on my life. And
from inside.
First, yes. And the second 10 years was just trying to figure out why I was still there, even though, I was reading the paper, watching the news. I see all the people getting out on DNA. And for me, the course was continuing to turn me down. So it was.
What kept you going?
Faith. Faith in God. And I had people like Mark and Larry Little and some of the community that would always write and keep my spirits up.
How was the ACLU involved in the case, or have you worked with them since? Or,
well, in 2002, the ACLU in North Carolina helped push through legislation called the Innocence Protection Act. That law provided for DNA testing in the post-conviction process. We were able to use that law to file a motion in 2003 asking that the DNA evidence be entered in the DNA databases in the state and around the country. And it was that motion that led to a long series in the Winston-Salem Journal, which then led to the DNA match to the ultimate guy. So it was through the legislative efforts of the ACLU that Daryl was actually free.
And without that, would have been impossible.
Without that ability, legal right to file that motion, Daryl would still be in prison.
You've been free for 5 years now, Daryl.
Four.
What's it like to be at the ACLU conference full of people and full of...
It feels great to be around, to know that there's other people fighting the fight to help free innocent people and protecting people's rights and liberties. It feels wonderful.
Have you been in touch with some of the other people who have been exonerated and released?
Yes. I was the last three people to be released off death row in North Carolina. We was just in Raleigh a couple of weeks ago. Glenn Chaplin and Bo Jones and Jonathan Huffman. And we talk, and it's just amazing. It's to be there, to know what they went through, and to know that we're free now and doing things to help others that we left behind.
Now, you two have been at it for 20 years.
Yes.
More now. Well, what's your relationship been like over the years? Has it changed? Has it evolved, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at first it was attorney and client, but over the years it became more like brothers. And then since Daryl got out, we've gotten really close. I mean, we're best friends now. We travel around a lot with the film. We have our offices are in the same building. The Daryl Hunt Project is on the third floor. The Capitol Defender office is on the fourth floor. So we see each other a lot. We consult with each other on our other cases and try to bring to bear what we've learned.
Tell me about the Daryl Hunt Project. Daryl Hunt.
The Daryl Project is, we do three primary things. One is we work with innocence projects around the state and trying to free other innocent men and women. And we do reentry work, which for anybody coming out of prison, trying to help them get reacclimated back into society by helping them find housing, clothing, counseling.
Who helped you?
The community. I had a good support system coming out.
But you saw the need for more.
Yes, because people don't understand. People think, well, once you're released, that's it. I mean, you're happy and everything. You can go back about your life, and that's not the case. You know, I still wake up 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning sitting on the side of my bed waiting on an officer to tell me I can go use the restroom. But who can I tell that to that will understand it? So we use a lot of mentoring. Everybody, actually I have a mentor group that meets every Monday where we sit around and talk about different issues that you can't talk to my wife. I can't tell her certain things that happened to me in prison or that I seen in prison. So, but as people coming out of prison, we can relate to each other.
In some weird way, did your 20-year ordeal make you into this community leader, or do you think this is the life you would have ended up with?
I don't know, because for me, in 1984, the only thing I wanted to do was work for the city of Winston-Salem in the street division as my grandfather and get a house and get married, have a couple of kids, a dog.
Yeah,
and, that was it. But today is I'm more focused on helping others and doing the right thing to make sure that what happened to me don't happen to someone else.
And Mark, how has all this affected your work?
Well, what I do now is I just represent people who are charged with murder and facing the death penalty. And for the last 5 years, that's all I've been focusing on. And I would have to say that it's a direct result of my work in Daryl's case. Learned a lot, got a lot of experience, and there's a lot of problems with the capital punishment system. It's broken, and I just try to help save other individuals on a case-by-case basis.
Well, Daryl Hunt and Mark Rebel, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Oh,
thank you.
You've been listening to Voices from the 2008 ACLU Membership Conference. You can hear more of these conversations at the website aclu.org, and you can subscribe to the podcast feed through the iTunes Music Store. Just search for ACLU. This is Matt Dellinger.